and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A bombshell day in federal court as former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan testifies in his own defense. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and much more.
The kick on the way by Santos, and it is good!
The Bears end a disappointing season on a high note by finally beating the Packers.
It feels really good when the public likes them, or if I go somewhere and someone mentions, oh, I buy those all the time.
And a beloved lunchroom cookie being recreated. And now some of today's top stories. Former President Jimmy Carter began his final trip back to Washington, D.C. today for 3 days of state funeral rites. The 39th president had been lying in repose at the Carter Presidential Center in Atlanta since the weekend after his death at the age of 100 last month. He was honored by members of Congress in the Capitol Rotunda this afternoon. He'll receive a state funeral Thursday at the Washington National Cathedral, where President Joe Biden will deliver a eulogy. In a surprising move, former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan took the stand today to testify in his own defense. In his first comments on the witness stand, the, quote, young 82-year-old denied trading his public office for private gain, saying, quote, when people ask me for help, if possible, I tried to help them. The jury also heard about Madigan's upbringing, presenting himself as a member of a blue-collar family in a home that was not nurturing. The bombshell decision to testify came today as the month-long federal corruption trial comes to a close. Madigan, along with his former right-hand man Michael McLean, are facing charges of racketeering, bribery, and wire fraud. They have both pleaded not guilty. A bill that would regulate the sales of hemp-derived products did not pass in Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker supported the bill that would have effectively banned all sales. He cited public health concerns over minors having easy access to intoxicating products. Meanwhile, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson fought against the measure, saying it would prohibit revenue that could help out the cash-strapped city. The weed-like substances are growing popular among young people, particularly high school students, and sales have been taking up thanks to a loophole in federal law that allows smoke shops to sell to minors. Up next, our Spotlight Politics team on the strained relationship between Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Michael Madigan has decided to testify in his own corruption trial. Meanwhile, tense contract negotiations between the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools and a stalled bill reveals a rocky relationship between Mayor Brandon Johnson and Governor J.B. Pritzker. Here with all that and more is, of course, our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, team. Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So, as we heard, Michael Madigan testifying today in his own corruption trial, but there was some deliberation beforehand. Heather, what was that discussion?
Well, I don't think anybody really expected Michael Madigan to get up on the stand and start testifying. This is a man who is famously very sort of closed-mouthed and sort of he keeps himself to himself, so to speak. Now, because this was so unexpected, there was an issue out there. The government wants $2.8 million from Madigan, essentially to want him to forfeit the profits of what they say is this massive criminal conspiracy. Now, it's a little bit of a tricky law question, right? If Madigan agrees to sort of waive his right to not testify in his criminal case, does he also waive that right in the forfeiture case? And can the, you know, judge or the jury in that case hold that against him? The judge eventually said, you know what, we're not going to make any ruling one way or the other. We'll just move forward. We'll put a pause on that. But I think that gives you a sense of just how unusual it is for for a defendant in this kind of case to get up on the stand. And I think I personally was shocked to hear it sort of start with a recitation of his hardscrabble upbringing on the Chicago Southwest Side and his dad. Problems with alcohol and anger and sort of, you know, sort of the pressure he faced sort of working his way up. Oh, and, you know, the help he got from his good friend, Richard J. Daley.
That too,
yeah. Obviously. Amanda, what might the defense be trying to show by putting Madigan on the stand?
I mean, I think some of what Heather just indicated there in terms of his difficulties growing up and what he achieved, drawing a contrast there, making him more relatable. You've heard so much about his being a vaunted, powerful, the guy, really, in the state capitol and all of Illinois politics. And this sort of puts it in perspective and tries to, I think, humanize him some. You also heard him flat out deny many of these allegations, which might raise suspicion. Remember, he only really has to convince one juror. And so get out there. It's perhaps something that they are saying is worth a shot. This is a man who, yes, despite his testifying that he is conflict avoidant, is clearly somebody who has seen more than his fair share of conflicts, waded through them, dealt with them, gone before some very powerful and important figures in his lifetime, didn't get to rise to be the Speaker of the Illinois House and head of the Democratic Party unless he was willing to take some risks. And so he's taking another big gamble here.
Certainly not by being any shrinking violet. Nick, is this unusual for someone in Madigan's position to take the stand?
Yes. Next question.
<Hard yet. laughs>
No, I mean, you know, it is, as Amanda said, it's an incredible risk. And clearly this is someone who is, you know, conflict avoidant, at least in public. Behind the scenes, he, you know, was widely regarded as basically a master chess player when it came to, you know, legislative and political strategy. So clearly they think this is not the kind of decision that's going to be entered into lightly. It's a huge risk for Madigan and his defense team to open him up to prosecutors to allow him a cross-examination. Now, we did see in the so-called ComEd 4 corruption trial that preceded this case, we saw two of the defendants testify on their own behalf and later get convicted. You know, if you look back to 2011, former Governor Rob Blagojevich testified on his own behalf, also convicted. Certainly that's not necessarily a fully representative sample, but, you know, it demonstrates the fact that folks who think they can get up there and maybe persuade just one juror with their argumentative powers, it's a real gamble.
And I'd add, in each of those cases, though we don't know, I haven't spoken with Madigan about this, we have had his public statements and, of course, his plea that he really believes he did not break the law or do anything wrong, as did some of the individuals that you just indicated there.
Yep.
So that's a factor.
Yeah, that personal, you know, feeling that they mm-hmm. have about this that motivates some of this,
right.
For sure.
So Chicago Teachers Union negotiations continuing. Nick, what is the latest?
They are still at an impasse. The CTU is still out here, you know, arguing that CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, who will be back in court on Thursday, you know, in this matter of whether or not he should be the one leading the district solely, you know, in charge of these negotiations. You know, they really see him as blocking the way toward a contract agreement. We heard yesterday CTU President Stacey Davis Gates say, you know, we've created the conditions for them to say yes. There are still big sticking points with some of the non-economic issues, key things like teacher evaluations, like prep time. You know, and they're also saying, listen, this is a matter that we need to settle before President Trump takes office. They'd hoped to do it before the end of last year. Obviously, as we all know, that did not happen, but they are really still stuck on this negotiation. We are set to get an update from the CTU at 6 o'clock tonight, so just a little while from now.
Mayor Johnson joins us yesterday on Monday, where he defended the decision that the board made to fire CPS CEO Pedro Martinez. He also rejected the idea that he's working on the behalf of CTU. Heather, what has he said about this issue?
I was really struck by sort of his position being completely in line with CTU on these contract proposals. And what's interesting is that why isn't there a deal then, right? If the mayor and the union are in alignment, what is holding it up? Why are there starting to be whisperings about teach-ins and labor actions? And I think that part of it is we don't know what's going on behind those closed doors. But the fact of the matter is there's not a pot of money to cover these contract, you know, costs. And it's going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, maybe tens of millions of dollars. But it is a really strange place for Chicago politics to be in, and I don't think anybody is really quite sure what to make of it and sort of what the sticking point is. Now, it's clear that CTU sees sort of Pedro Martinez as sort of the big bad guy, right? They're sort of casting him as the impediment here. The board has the right to approve a contract. They're not allowed to participate directly in those negotiations now. Will that change after this week's court hearing? We'll have to see.
Yeah, but if there is perhaps some, you know, some daylight between Mayor Johnson and the CTU, you know, this could be an instance of Mayor Johnson coming from, you know, outside of city government. Obviously, he had experience on the county board, but a lot of time as an organizer. Now he is working as an elected official, and he sees what it's like on the other side. You know, we heard Stacey Davis Gates yesterday saying, you know, we're not the fifth floor of City Hall. We're not the mayor's office. Don't look to us and assume that we are automatically in line with one another.
Okay, so a bill to regulate hemp products, though. Governor Pritzker has backed this bill. It stalled in Springfield. Amanda, remind us what this legislation is looking to do.
So, I mean, this is not new. This has stalled for truly years. There has been an ongoing discussion about how to deal with these intoxicating hemp products, which are in a sort of legal gray area. And there's near universal agreement that something has to be done, that there should be regulation. It's just a matter of how far to go. The legislation that the governor has embraced that is, by the way, dead. New General Assembly will be inaugurated tomorrow, so there's no chance of this having a revival, at least anytime in the near future. It would essentially, some of these businesses say, put them out of business completely. And so that's where you're seeing some pushback.
So Governor Pritzker, though, he did weigh in on his relationship with the mayor today. Here's a bit of what he said.
They don't reach out very often, and it seems like they don't have good relationships in Springfield. In part because they don't do the outreach that's necessary. Maybe in the time that he's been mayor, he's called me perhaps 5 times.
What's prompting this kind of reaction?
Yeah, ouch. That was not an off-the-cuff statement. I mean, the governor certainly intended to make those remarks. And this is, I think, not necessarily surprising. There has been recognized that Johnson is not beloved in Springfield, doesn't have those connections. He's had turnover within his office. But for the governor to say it so blatantly when typically you just kind of have them say, yeah, we're Democrats, we all get along, we try. I think it is frustration that you had Johnson at the very last minute enter these negotiations. Pritzker went on to say that he does not believe that the mayor should take responsibility for felling that legislation. As I noted, there is some true back and forth at the heart of the matter, but his inserting himself last minute, not appreciated by the governor's office. This is most certainly a power play, and I think portends some rough things ahead as negotiations come forward. The mayor has a lot of asks out of Springfield, and Springfield facing its own budget woes.
Yes, some of those asks he discussed last night, not getting too particular, but more money, basically. That is Spotlight. Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, Nick Blumberg. Thanks, gang. Up next, we unpack the Bears season and look ahead to next season. There's always next year. It's become a common refrain for a whole generation of Chicago Bears fans, but some were dreaming of the playoffs this season after notching a few early wins under rookie quarterback Caleb Williams. But a 10-game losing streak dashed those dreams and cost head coach Matt Eberflus and defensive coordinator Shane Waldron their jobs. Now, Bears fans find themselves in a familiar spot, contemplating another season of failure and hoping for a better future. Joining us now to give us his take on yet another lackluster season is James Big Cat Williams, former offensive lineman for the Chicago Bears. We were just talking about how it seems like we're having the same conversation every year.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? it just seems like the same stuff keeps popping up again and again. Not making the right decisions as far as coaches are concerned, then having to backtrack and start all over again. And the process for starting all over again being a little flawed as far as the way you're supposed to bring people in, the way you're supposed to set it up. Because now you're looking at a team that's going to have a first-time head coach coming in or a new head coach coming in, And he's not going to be sure about the longevity of the GM that's bringing him in, which is going to bring up a lot more questions. So it's a process, but like you said, I feel like we've been, for the last several years, we've been having the same conversation at the end of the season.
Like Groundhog Day. Yeah. So let's talk about Sunday's game. Not only did the Bears break that 10-game losing streak, but also the 11-game losing streak against the Packers when they finally beat them at Lambeau Field. What are your thoughts on Sunday's game?
I was happy for them. You know, I did not want to see them have to go into the offseason with an 11-game losing streak, with a loss on their mind at the end of the season. So for them to be able to get that win against the Packers, it was good. I was proud. I was happy for them. I was happy for your interim head coach. I was just happy for the entire organization because they needed that.
Overall this season, you know, when you analyze what we've seen from the Bears, you know, the season started with so much promise to end miserably. What do you see there?
I see that this coaching hire is going to be very important. This coaching hire is going to be something that either they're going to need to ride for the next 8 to 12, 15 seasons, hopefully, or they're going to go back another 10 or 12 seasons of doing this same thing of bad football. And I really don't want to watch that anymore.
Wow, yeah. So a major Chicago fan saying, yeah, I don't think I can keep this up.
Yeah, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. I bleed blue and orange, just like everyone else who has played there. But you see the things that are going on this offseason, and like you said, it's Groundhog Day. I feel like we've been here several times before, and I'm not sure what's going to change. I have hope, but I don't know how much.
So the Bears lost. There were four games that the Bears lost on the last play of the game. Is it possible that, you know, that their record is actually better than or that they're playing better than their record shows?
You are what your record is. They had opportunities to get things done, whether it be mishaps by the players or by the coaching staff. I think everything broke down around them as this season went on, and that's how you get to that 10-game losing streak. Everything breaking down. It's not just the players, it's not just the coaches, it's that entire building that needs to go through a mental, physical, whatever, overhaul to figure out what's wrong, what needs to be repaired, how they get things aligned, how they move forward in the proper way.
So obviously a tough rookie season for quarterback Caleb Williams. Here's what he had to say after the game on Sunday when asked what needs to change for next season.
I think my role in that is being able to see where I can grow, whether it's on the field, whether it's off the field, whether it's in the locker room, or anything like that. Maybe having less people around, less distractions, less less time for other things, whether that's on the field and being able to decipher things faster on the field, whether that's being able to be more accurate, whether that's being able to have more game-winning drives, whatever it takes.
So what do you think of what he was able to do in his rookie season?
Well, I think just listening to him talk, he's been consistent all season. He has talked about the things that you want your quarterback to talk about. It has been more me, me, me than we when we're losing. You know, the things that I need to work on, the things that I need to take care of, and those are the things that he's talking about improving on. Yes, there are definitely situations where he could have thrown people under the bus, but he has not taken that road. And I think that's a good beginning for a young quarterback. So to watch him move on, I mean, he's done some of the things that we thought he was able to do coming out as a young quarterback, being the first overall pick. You look at him at the end of halves, you look at him at the end of games, the things he's able to accomplish. But then you also have to go back and look at some of the things that he's regressed on. Is that because of the line in front of him? Is that because of the things that he was being taught? You know, those are things that we won't know because we're not in that locker room every day.
A lot of names, of course, being floated for potential head coach replacement. What type of coach do you think the Bears should be looking for? What kind of qualities do they need?
Well, I think, first of all, you need to bring someone in here who's going to take charge and who's going to stick to his guns. He's going to come in with a plan. When he first gets here, he's going to stick to that plan. The message is going to be the same to the players, whether it's year one or year four, year eight. The message is going to be the same. This is how we get better. This is how we do things. This is how we go about, you know, being a good organization. And it's going to have to change from the bottom, from the players, all the way up to the top. And they've got to figure out what is going to make things work.
Okay, so we know the Chicago Bears are not going to be playing in the Super Bowl this year, obviously. Who are you tipping? Who do you think is going to make it? Who do you think is going to win?
With the Bears being out and our division being so tough, I'd love to see Detroit be able to go all the way. I just don't know if they can because of all the injuries they've suffered over the last couple weeks. But if during that week off they can get a couple guys back, I feel like they have a very good chance of getting there and possibly winning it all.
All right, pulling for the Lions this time, but only because it's
only because
we're nowhere near the Bears being even close. All right, a very frustrated James Big Cat Williams. Thank you for joining us as always.
Thanks.
Appreciate it,
me.
Of course. Up next, how a simple cookie became a school lunch staple. Stay with us. Those buttery lunchroom cookies, they were a staple in hundreds of Chicago public schools. This simple shortbread cookie sold for a couple of cents for years. Joanna Hernandez spoke with an entrepreneur putting her spin on this classic treat.
How can you forget the three-finger-pressed butter cookies? The aroma of these freshly baked treats will take you back in time.
So this is where the cookie magic happens.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what inspired you to make that classic lunchroom cookie that many of us grew up to love.
Yeah, it was very familiar to me, and a recipe kind of came my way, and I thought I'd try it out. And unsuccessful the first time, but the second time they came out great. And I've always sort of been an entrepreneur at heart, and I thought maybe I'll sell these.
Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, Cheryl Crockett says she still remembers the joy of biting into a lunchroom cookie.
Mom and Dad gave us a little extra money, you know, to buy those, so we would be excited for cookie day because we could smell them from our classroom.
Crockett took her fond childhood memories and turned them into a business after spending 20 years in corporate America. She says her big career change started in her kitchen before branching out and eventually opening her own space in the medical district.
I've taken over a space and named it Crockett Cookies Food Venue. So we work with a couple of food vendors here, and then the other large part of this is where we produce the cookies.
Every day, 5,000 cookies are freshly baked here.
It starts with my mixer, who mixes on a large 80-quart mixer. And then we get them to a cookie machine that kind of cuts the dough for us. And then we do a little bit of handwork. There's quite a bit of handwork production involved with making the cookie, too. So it's very personalized.
So we know the classic lunchroom cookie has some of those four simple ingredients, flour, butter, vanilla extract.
Sugar.
And sugar.
Of course,
you can't forget the sugar. What would you say makes yours different? What's your spin to it?
Well, speaking of sugar, I think one of the things I wanted to do was pull back on the sugar. I really wanted people to taste the butter and the freshness. So there's, there's sugar in there, but you really do taste the buttery flavor with my cookies because I pulled back. I took out some of the sugar. Yeah, did you want to try one?
Of course. Oh, I'm not going to say no to cookies.
Wonderful. And as you can see, the three fingerprint there.
Which is very important because that's the classic staple of when you would go into the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. It's a three finger print.
Three fingerprint there. And so I packaged them this way with sort of a clear top so that when people go in the store, they'll see that three fingerprint. It brings back memories. It's nostalgic. And that's kind of a selling point. It makes people realize what they're buying.
Let's try this.
It's your turn.
I have not tried these cookies in a long time. I remember them.
Okay.
Let's see.
Freshly out the oven.
Mmm. Just the butter. They're so good.
Thank you.
It has been 11 years since Crockett Cookies launched, But for Cheryl, the memory of securing her first account to sell her cookies still brings her joy.
I decided to try and get them into one Walgreens, and I went back to the same location, kind of threw on the old corporate suit, and I left samples for the manager. He wasn't there the first couple times.
Eventually, Crockett secured a meeting with a manager, a move she says changed the course of her business, walking away with an order for 200 packages of cookies.
It feels really good when the public likes them, or if I go somewhere and someone mentions, oh, I buy those all the time.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
Crockett cookies are sold in 300 stores across Chicago, offering classic butter and peanut butter cookies. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. You can also stream us on Facebook and our website. And please join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. It's Inauguration Day in Springfield, a look at what's on the horizon for state lawmakers in 2025. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.